Welcome to this week's episode of The Nerdy Rat. This week we're going to be talking about two of our new foster rats, the Wonder Woman movie, and our sad goodbye to Adam West, who we just love. So let's go. So welcome to this week's episode of The Nerdy Rat. We're going to start off by talking some about two new foster rats that we got. So do you want to say a little bit about them, babe?
Well, why don't you start
since you picked
them up, you know more about their family.
That's true. Well, so we have a boy and a girl, their brother and sister. They have not been living with each other because neither one is neutered or spayed.
Are they actually brother and sister?
I think they actually are. Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah, I think they actually came from the same litter. So their human mom, for whatever reason, has to give them up. And I kind of feel bad. She really, really loved them a lot. I met her in person when she was handing them over to the rescue. But unfortunately, she didn't know a lot about caring for rats. And what really is troublesome is that the vet that she took the rats to also didn't know about caring for the rats. So first of all, we've talked about Toro, who was our latest adoption, and how he wasn't raised with other rats and how sad and depressed he was, and how rats need to be socialized. So these two rats have been living in separate cages their whole lives with maybe a little bit of supervised interaction and not getting to live with each other. And that's, I can tell they're depressed, you know?
Well, the real problem I have with these rats, I mean, not a problem with the rats, but the thing that made me upset when we got them was the fact that Rojo, the boy, he's got pretty bad mites, and he's got a really bad respiratory infection that seems to have gone untreated for some time.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, the owners did the right thing. She took it to a vet, but apparently this vet did not know rats at all.
I know.
And did not give any kind of treatment. Like, she didn't even know it was a respiratory infection, because I believe she said they thought he would get upset when
if he was handled too much.
Because,
right. Because that's when they could hear him squeaking and coughing. Squeaking,
but
yeah.
it was respiratory issues.
Right.
And he's got scabs all over him from mites. And
she had specifically taken him to the vet for the mites, and the vet should have treated him with Revolution.
This vet should have honestly refused to take him as a patient, because they clearly have no business seeing rats.
I agree.
You know, the mites are cleared up with two doses of Revolution, and, you know, antibiotics for the respiratory infection, which we're doing.
Right. And but the rescue.
My concern is that the respiratory may have gone untreated for too long.
I know. I'm kind of worried about
that
too.
I understand that not everybody thinks to go look stuff up on the internet. Mm-hmm. Like, there's a lot of people out there that just aren't into, like, they're not up with computers, but she did the right thing by taking them to the vet. And that's why I'm more upset with the vet than her. Mm-hmm. Like,
me too.
It's like, yeah, it would have been nice if she had, you know, reached out to people online or, like, you know, done some searching to see what
but
kind of treatments
she
are available.
Doing the right thing.
Well, that's absolutely right. Like, if you're sick, you go to the doctor. If your animal's sick, you go to a vet. And, and a vet should. And I think, you know, if you're to the people that listen to our podcast, like you, you know, I couldn't imagine anyone that would go out and listen to a podcast about rats would get in this situation, because.
Yeah,
you have problems and they don't give you solutions to those problems, go to another vet or
look online, Google.
You know, like, there's only so many issues that rats can have,
and
the two most common this rat has Rojo has with the respiratory problems and the mites. And the thing about mites is all rats have them.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of times they'll groom themselves to keep them in check.
Mm-hmm.
Revolution treatment, like once now, every year.
Let's explain what Revolution is. Revolution is a topical treatment, and you just put a little bit of liquid on and rub it into the skin.
It's the same what they give for cats for fleas.
Okay.
You just put a drop on the back of their neck, and it'll kill all the mites, and then... In two weeks you treat a second time.
No, you don't have to. She our coordinator just wanted us to for Rojo because his were so bad. She just kind of wanted it as precautionary.
But it kills any
eggs that have been laid on the skin.
Revolution gets absorbed into their system, and then that kills the eggs as well as
the topical mites. So just for Rojo because she was concerned and she kind of wants to be.
Yeah, and I think it may have been exacerbated too with the fact that he was alone,
mm-hmm.
where normally in a colony of rats, he would have other rats grooming him too. And that would help.
I was thinking that too.
Because you notice a lot of the scars are on his neck and face where
he can't groom himself.
Yeah. And, I mean, that's another reason why rats are...
I know. They're colony animals. And I know. I feel bad. And I feel bad. Like, both of the rats, you know, are pretty lonely. They seem kind of depressed. And I know they're going to be so much happier. So what's going on now with us and the rescue and everything is that their human mom agreed to donate the neuter fee for Rojo. So Rojo's going to get neutered on Friday. And then after a week has gone by and he's completely sterile. And again, you do have to wait a week to make sure all the sperm have died and he's completely sterile. Then we can reintroduce them and let them live together.
Our only real concern at this point is if his respiratory is going to clear up enough for him to be put under for the neuter.
Because we don't, it can be kind of dangerous to go for a rat to go under anesthesia if they're having respiratory issues. So,
yeah, well, but our what they use to put him under is gas.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So, yeah, I can see where that could cause some serious issues.
Well, and I think when you're under, your breathing is suppressed anyway because you're unconscious. So I think if you're already having trouble breathing, that could be a bad thing.
Yeah, but I mean, I'm really just, like, I don't understand why a vet would, because I've called, when I lived down in Florida, I've called vets and I said, do you guys see rats?
Right.
And they've said, no, we don't.
Right.
And I feel like.
That's the response.
I think some vets
do.
Will say, if you call a vet and they say, not normally, but we will.
Right.
I would not go to that vet because that means that they're just going to.
I know.
I don't know why they did. Like, some vets will do this where they're like, well, we'll just treat them like we would any other animal. But you can't. Because you can't use the same medications on them.
I know.
Because
they gave her something for the mites. Whatever they gave her didn't work. It wasn't Revolution. That's all I can say is that it wasn't Revolution. It may have been a powder or something. I don't know.
And it's really only.
Only Revolution only, that works.
Well, also for antibiotics, only Beta and Doxy are
the only
really effective
for rats.
I think there are some other antibiotics that they'll sometimes try to prescribe, but they don't work on rats. So I feel very sad
for their human mom because she loved them so much and she was really distressed about the mites. She even, you know, she was telling us as soon as she dropped them off that she was so concerned. She had even, when the stuff the vet gave her didn't work, she tried changing the bedding because she thought maybe the bedding, you know, the type of bedding she was using was maybe exacerbating it or they were allergic to it or something. And you know, I feel like my heart kind of breaks for her, and it's hard because it's like you don't know what you don't know until you know it. But it's I'm just grateful that our rescue is going to be able to help these two and that she's had supervised playtime with them. But we don't feel comfortable doing that because we really do not want this little girl to get pregnant because she's not fixed and the rescue is not equipped to take in a lot of babies right now.
She would just hold them. And then just let them, like, interact face-to-face, I guess.
And she did hold them for the photo, and they were really cute. They just snuggled their heads right on each other, and I could tell they were so lonely, and they really wanted to be together. So, you know, it's good. And in a couple weeks, you know, they'll get to live together. And until then, I'm using the bonding pouch a lot, and I'm snuggling with both of them for a couple hours every day. Like, if I'm just drinking my coffee in the morning, I put one of them in the bonding pouch, and I let him sit. I actually have Pinky on me right now. Not our girl Pinky, but Pinky's one of our new fosters. She's sitting on me right now, helping me with the podcast.
Yep.
Yeah.
I mean, they're really sweet.
They're both really sweet. And their mom really loved them a lot. She handled them a lot. So they're very tame. She gave them lots of playtime outside of their cage every day. You know, she really tried hard. Yeah. And
it's
just unfortunate.
It's like, you know, you trust these vets when you go to them to do the right thing. And, you're paying money for this.
And you trust them to tell you if they can't help you or if they don't have the knowledge. You know?
That's why, I'm so upset with this. I wish... I don't know. I can kind of part want to like find out what vet it is,
but
but if you're listening out there and you have a rat and you're not sure, there is the rat lady has a listing of rat vets across the country.
Who's the rat lady? Is that
they have a website? Let's see.
Okay, it's like a web personality. Rat.
She runs a website.
Ratfanclub.com
it's ratfanclub.org.
Okay.
And they've got a list of rat vets, and these are all recommendations.
Our
vet that we use, Dr. Foster, actually had some outdated information on there, and I emailed her, and she updated the list.
Oh, good,
so the list
is
updated. It's actively updated. So.
I guess dependent on referrals and things like that. But yeah, that's a good resource. And, you know, I don't know. I would just say if you have a pet, any kind of pet, really, you want to make sure you really thoroughly research it. And I'm going to say Google is great if you verify that it's a reliable resource that it gives you. You know, but seriously, just Google, like, whatever pet you're thinking of getting, Google common problems. Google, common treatments, common illnesses, common medications.
If you take your rat to a vet and they're not getting better and you're not really...
Mm-hmm.
You know, you're second guessing, like get a second opinion, call, and feel free to call vets too. Cause you can ask them, be like bluntly, like, hey, do you guys see rats and are you experienced with rats? Just because they'll see your rat doesn't mean they're experienced with rats. Right. So I would ask both questions.
Like
and
if
see
they're
what
a specialist.
They
yeah.
And there's so many vets out there. Like I know, what was her name?
Doreen?
No, the girl that just passed that we were
Athena?
Taking care of. Yeah, Athena's parents.
Yeah.
They were going to a pretty good rat vet, but they were paying a lot of money.
Well, and
like
that's...
I feel like they were very overpriced for what they were getting. Like, they
but
seemed like they were a good vet, but...
Yeah, but I mean, remember when Doreen was having all those issues and our vet was out of town? And, Doreen kept opening her stitches up. Those vets were crazy expensive
that we
took her to.
It's a shop around for a vet.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
But, I feel that's, again, why I feel really kind of sympathetic towards their human mom, because she might not have had the money to take them to the vet a second time.
Yeah, a lot of people don't, like...
That's very
rats
expensive.
Rats are relatively inexpensive pets. And,
Well,
if you
do you
go
mean
to, the
to
wrong
buy
vet,
or do you mean to treat?
Well, for both. Or to own. When you compare them to a cat or
a
dog.
To a cat or dog, yeah,
they're,
definitely.
They're relatively, and I think some people are a little bit naive about what they could actually end up costing, because, I've had people say to me before, it was like, well, rat only costs $10. It's like, that's not the point. The point is, I'm trying to provide the best life for this animal that I can.
Right.
And that,
and also there's a lot of common illnesses that rats can get. Whereas like a parakeet, there's not very much that can go wrong with a parakeet where you'd have to take it to a vet. I mean, honestly, unless you have a female and the female gets egg bound. But other than that, so with a parakeet, it might be like a $20 pet and you're not going to expect to have a lot of vet bills. But with rats, there is a fair amount of stuff that goes wrong with them on a frequent basis.
Yeah.
Or could go wrong. Like the myco, because we've talked about before, all the rats have the myco, which is the respiratory infection.
Yeah.
And it can flare up anytime throughout their life and they're going to need the antibiotics, and
there's myco, there's mites, there's tumors, there's mammary tumors.
Right. And then, it might be a $10 pet, but like we've talked about before, if you want to prevent the mammary tumors, you're going to want to get them spayed,
And
if you have boys, you're going to want to get them neutered so they don't fight later in life,
Yeah.
And that costs like anywhere in our area from like $75 to $150 to get a spay or neuter. So.
Yeah. Yeah, it's tough when you see an animal suffer like Rojo is right now. I'm really hoping he gets better in the next couple of days.
Well, and it's tough for me too, because like I met the mom in person, and I see her suffering too. She's suffering because he's suffering, and I felt like it was crushing her to know that he had a respiratory infection that she didn't know about, and that there was a treatment for the mites that she didn't know about, because she really loved these pets and did not want them to be suffering. You know?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, she knew. She just didn't.
Yeah, I mean, she donated $80 to the rescue to pay for the neuter. Like, this is not somebody who didn't love her pets and didn't want to take good care of them, you know?
Well, she absolutely did the right thing by taking them to the vet.
Yeah. And you know what? The good news is they're in the rescue now, and Rojo's going to get neutered, and then they'll be able to live together for the rest of their lives. Yeah,
hopefully next podcast we'll have a very happy update on Rojo and Pinky.
Yeah.
You know, if...
We hope so.
We'll see. Hopefully he's on medicine for his infection. So, but let's talk about Toro.
Yeah,
our new boy. He's doing really well now.
He is doing really well. He's really fit into the pack and into the cage well. So if you didn't listen to any of the previous episodes, he was a rat who came into the rescue who had been raised alone his whole life. And we've talked about rats are social. They need to live with other rats. So again, he was super depressed when we got him, and I wanted to adopt him, so we did. And it took some time to get him settled into living with eight other rats, but he has acclimated so well. And the difference in him emotionally, like, can't you just see it? Like, how happy, how much happier he is.
He's very happy, especially when you look at a boy like Rojo, and then you see Toro, and he's all happy and healthy, and you know, he tussles with Nim every now and then, but it's nothing serious.
Like, it's just little dominant stuff. And you know what? Nobody's excessively mean with it. And all the rats kind of tussle a little bit in the cage at this point. But nobody's, you know, it's nothing. It's just normal stuff. It's just normal pack life.
They're all healthy, and they got
smooth and they love each other. Yeah.
Yeah.
And now it's like, especially when I see Pinky and Rojo and I see how sad they are and like how needy for attention they are. Toro was like that too when we first got him. It's like he's just craving the human contact because he wants like a warm body to snuggle with, because that's what his body needs, you know?
Yeah.
So, yeah, but it just warms my heart to see little Toro, and he is doing so well. And so that kind of gives me a lot of hope that Pinky and Rojo are going to do well too soon.
Yeah. This morning, I think our girl Pinky was tussling with Annie because I just fed them, and I think Pinky was trying to put all the food away.
You mean Tippy Toe or Pinky?
Or
was it? I think it was Tippy Toe. It was probably Tippy Toe. Tippy Toe. Our Pinky and Tippy Toe are both pink-eyed whites, and they look very similar. Yeah. But Tippy Toe is the hoarder.
I couldn't tell because I wasn't quite, because they look so similar.
I'm going to guess if it was one putting the food away that it was Tippy Toe.
Well, because I think she wanted, I think the fight was that Tippy Toe wanted to put the food away and Annie was like trying to eat it. So I ended up giving them like more food because I was like, I don't want you guys to fight over plenty
so
of food.
So hilarious. Tippy Toe's like, no, we have to save this for later. We might be lost. Well, and Tippy Toe was the rat who was found outside lost. And so I think she's really just got that deprivation fear that she's never going to have enough food. So I think that's why she does it.
Mm-hmm.
'Cause she's the only rat who really is that passionate about hoarding the food.
Yeah, so she's definitely. All the other ones will just eat, and then she'll start storing it. And she's like,
she files it.
Put this all away.
She files it in different hammocks and different boxes. I think she might sort it by type or something too. She's such a sweetheart though. I love her.
I don't know if she sorts it by type.
I don't know, but she has like her numerous stashes where everything goes. So, yeah. Now, it's funny. I saw Toro squeaking earlier because Nim was like Nim was just holding him down because she wanted to lick him, because Nim likes to groom everybody. And he was fussing because he didn't want to be held down and licked. But then a little later, I saw Nim in the hammock with Squeaks, and she was just licking Squeaks, and Squeaks was all happy. She's like, that's right, Mommy. You lick me. Yes, I just lie here. Lick me, Mommy. So it was really cute.
And
just good girls and boys.
So, So Rat's Life magazine has been around for 10 years now?
Yeah, they're having a competition. If you look on Facebook, they're having a bunch of prizes and stuff. If you submit a photo of your rats with the number 10 and you tag them in the photo, you can win something. But yeah, so 10 years.
Wow, that's crazy. That's Or it's a Rats World magazine.
Right? A Rats World magazine. Is that it? Okay. Yeah. I don't know. I wrote it down, but I don't know the name exactly. Now, is that one that's affiliated with Marty Mouse or no? It's separate from
Marty Mouse like does the column on that because I wrote in to Dr. Marty.
But I was wondering, is that Ratty's owners to do the magazine or do they just have a column?
I
don't think
so. They probably just have a column.
Okay.
I would imagine.
Yeah.
But it's a pretty cool magazine. If you don't, it's like $20 a year or something for the PDFs or whatever.
Yeah.
But you can get a print version for... that's a single.
You can either buy single issues or you could subscribe. So we'll post a link on the page on our show notes for the Facebook link. So if you want to check it out or try to win some prizes by submitting cute little photos of your rats.
Yeah, it's ratsworld.com. It's a cute little magazine. I remember growing up, we always had like the Bird Life magazine. Oh, my mom used to always get that because we had parakeets growing up.
Oh, that's cool.
And I can't remember what was the name of the... It was like Bird Talk. That's what it was. Bird Talk. Yeah, we get that.
Oh, that's cute. I never heard of that.
Yeah, it's cool. It's like it has all these articles about different birds and stuff. Like I remember way back when they had an article about Alex, the talking African gray that was like... They were doing studies with, and he was like really, really super intelligent.
Oh,
like he could have conversations with people, and they understood basic math and stuff.
Oh, that's really cute.
Yeah, he like lived with one of the researchers, and they were like researching like animal, brain and stuff like that. It was really cool.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah, he's really you should look him up sometime.
Yeah,
he's cool.
Yeah, birds are very smart. I mean, in one of the places where I was living, the landlords had to get the pest people out, which, you know, I'm not a big fan of the pest people aside from termite control. But I don't know. I think they had a dead bat in their attic or something like that. But so they had some holes in the eaves or something like that. And they were saying that they had to patch them particularly carefully because if they didn't do it, like he said, if there was any gaps where the light could come through at all, birds were very smart and birds would figure out how to pull it apart and get in.
Yeah.
So they had to patch it with wood so that there was like not any light that could shine through at all so that the birds... He's like, birds are very intelligent. And all I had was my parakeets at that point because I hadn't met Matt yet. And I was like, that's right. Birds are very intelligent. That's right. But they are. They're super smart. Birds are some
of the smartest animals out there, I think.
Like, yeah.
You hear a crazy story about crows all the time.
Yes.
Like
bringing little, like that little girl who they're friends with and they would bring her like little trinkets and stuff.
Yeah, there was that. And then there was like a study they were doing with... on this one college campus where the birds would recognize people by their face.
Oh, wow.
Where they like had people wearing masks and stuff and the birds would like would remember them. And not only would they remember them, they would communicate with other birds. Like, this person is a jerk.
Oh my gosh. Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah.
Oh.
Really cool stuff. Birds are super awesome.
Well, speaking of birds, I'll talk about our birds a little bit. So my bird Cookie Monster, he's unfortunately been a little traumatized over the course of his life. He's a parakeet and I didn't know any better. I got him from PetSmart, I think it was, at the time I got him. And, you know, he was in a flock and they had trouble catching him and he was scared. And, you know, and birds that have been born into a flock don't really do well apart from a flock. So, you know, live and learn. I didn't know any better at the time. So anyway, he's always been a very timid bird. But he's been getting braver little by little because he really loves our cat Kitten, even though he's a little just skittish just in general, but he really loves Kitten. So he started like where he bops at him with his nose, but he's trying to say hi. And at first I was like, well, is he trying to intimidate Kitten? Because the rats will sometimes like run up to the edge of the cage and like bop at Kitten and they're trying to scare him away sometimes. And Kitten is legit scared of that.
I always tell Kitten, it's like, if you don't leave those rats around, I'm going to let them out. I'm going to let Nim out and she'll put you in your place, Kitten.
But you know what? Kitten is much more cautious of the rats because he put his nose too close to the cage once or twice and they nipped him on his nose. And I felt really bad for him, but I was like, you know what? That's actually a better natural consequence than you or me yeah. trying to discipline him, because then it's coming from the rats. But anyway, but Cookie Monster, no, he was doing it to say hi, because like he'd bop at him and then he'd get nervous and he'd fly away. But then he would circle right back down and he'd bop at him again. And then he'd do it like 5 times in a row. And now he's been trying to bop at me some. And he's always been scared. He's not finger tame and he's always been really scared. And he'll like, he gets that eager look in his eye and he tries to inch a little closer to me when I give him his seed. And he's like, I want to. I'm a little scared, but I want to. And he's done it a couple times, like not to touch me, but just the fact that he would even try to interact with me makes me so happy. So good job, little Cookie Monster. Yeah. And in local animal news, our local baby eagles that they have the eagle cam for, they've been, one of them has been practicing flying in the nest. And there was such a cute video of the little eagle would just like hop and flutter the wings and like hover for a few minutes above the nest. And then she would do it again and again and again. And I think I saw today that she might have just taken her first fledgling fight.
Oh, cool.
So, yeah. So, I don't know then how soon after the fledgling flight it is until they leave the nest and go out into the world, but I'm thinking probably pretty soon.
Yeah.
So,
it's always exciting.
Yeah. Exciting, but then, you know, they won't be on the eagle cam anymore. But yeah.
I'm going to put a link to the eagle cam in the notes.
Yeah.
So,
yeah, right. We will. So, yeah. So, you want to talk about Kitten a little bit?
Well, you...
You want me to? Because I was the one worried about him.
Well, he was sneezing, and I think you got a little worried.
I did, because you know what? It had been going on for a couple weeks, and you know when you Google things, like, they always tell you what the worst-case scenario could be. And I wasn't necessarily freaked out, because I did see from the research that I did that the majority of the time when cats are sneezing, it's not a big deal. It's just a little virus or allergies. It resolves on its own. It's nothing to worry about. But they said if it goes on for more than a couple weeks, you might want to, you know, get your vet to check him out just in case. And then the thing that really concerned me is that it could actually be, in rare cases, an early sign of periodontal disease. And
which Kitten has already had 4 teeth out for...
Yes, he had a bad tooth infection in the fall, and he had to have 4 teeth out. So, you know, that was really what concerned me, because I just wanted to make sure that his teeth would be fine. And I just knew, too, for my own peace of mind, to me, it was worth it for the vet fee to take him in and have her check him out.
Well, I knew it would make you feel better.
Yes,
so,
it did. You know. It did. But we also learned something good, because we've been trying to help him lose some weight. And I was really surprised to discover that a lot of cat food contains a lot of crap that is not good for them. It contains wheat. It contains soy. It contains corn. And cats aren't supposed to have any of that. They don't need any carbs whatsoever, actually. And so Kitten's been putting on a lot of weight in the last 6 months or so. And he's definitely put on weight since we first had him. And so I don't know. I thought that at first I just kind of assumed that dry food would be like the rat food, and it would be perfectly proportioned with the right amount of proteins and whatever that he needs. So I was giving him more dry food and less wet food. And then I did some research online, and I came to learn that, oh no, the dry food is full of the corn and the gluten and the fillers, because in order to be dry food, it has to have all of that to be bound together. Now, for rats, that's not a bad thing necessarily, because the rats need some carbs. But for a cat, that isn't good, because he doesn't need any carbs, and he was eating too much of it. And I think he was eating more dry food because he wasn't getting enough of the nutrition that he needed.
I'm going to post a link if anybody's interested. My last cat I had was diabetic, so... We had to give him cat food with very low carbs. And there's a list of cat food. It's a list of cat food for basically diabetic cats, but it's not a bad reference, because it shows you the carbs and all these different brands of food.
That's good.
That you can get. And I remember I used to get, I don't remember if it was Friskies or it was one of the ones, It was like three or four different types that I would have to get for Marius, and that was available. I think it was Whiskas, yeah, the Whiskas brand, because a lot of them had very low carbs in them, and we tried to get lowest carbs possible. I think that'd be good for any cat, really, because cats shouldn't have. But you can look at this list at least.
Oh, you know,
look at what you have, and maybe look at getting something with a little bit lower carbs.
Well, and what shocked me too is then I thought, all right, well, I'll give him more wet food because that's pure protein. No, I hadn't been reading the ingredients labels on the wet food either. And a lot of the wet food, same thing, wheat, corn, soy, sugar, you know, and just all this stuff that I didn't want him to be eating. And so I really had to look hard to find some cat foods that didn't have all that crap. So I thought I had it right. I was feeding him a grain-free wet chicken at night, and I was feeding him a fish in the morning. Well, I'm glad I took him into the vet because I did not know this, but fish doesn't have taurine, and cats need taurine, and that's only in turkey, beef, and chicken. She was like, you can give him fish as a treat, but it doesn't have any nutrition whatsoever for him.
Yeah.
I was horrified. And again, this is like, you know, kind of like we were talking about with that other rat owner. I didn't know. I had no idea. And I had even done research on what the good cat foods are. Yeah, nothing had said to me.
You can really go down a rabbit hole looking up info on
it can be really hard
on cat food, because there's a lot of debate online about it.
Yeah, there really is.
I generally just try and go for like mostly wet food and try to keep it low carb as much as possible.
Yeah, but kitten's your cat too, and we haven't been feeding him that for the last 2-3 years, so you know, he was not getting that. But you know, I was glad to find the answer out from the vet.
I think before we were kind of trying to do like a balance of wet and dry food to keep his teeth clean. But
yeah, because we were giving him the dry food because of his teeth.
The problem was he was eating too much dry food, really.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. And so then, right. And then when we tried to shift it, we didn't realize that the wet food we were giving him had all this extra crap in it that he shouldn't have been eating. So, and then some of the wet food that claims not to have any of this stuff is super expensive. It would be like $2 a day. And you think about that, that's like $60 a month just to feed your cat wet food. And that's a lot. So I was able to find Fancy Feast. There's a couple flavors that don't have any added carbs in them. So there was one, it was like beef and liver, I think. There was a turkey and giblet one. And these are all the pâtés, because I found that all of the chunk ones or the steak ones, whatever, with the pieces, they have like, they tend to have sauces and stuff, which the sauce is going to have the wheat and the carbs and all that bad stuff in it. So, and there was a grain-free chicken pâté. So those are the three now that he rotates on. And, you know, he'll only get fish for a special treat from now on and not as part of his main course.
Yep.
So, but again, like you just go to the cat food aisle. Like, how would you know that? Because they sell fish for cat food, you know, right there in the food aisle. So who would know?
A lot of cat food is fish, and they don't really.
And they don't list that exactly. You really have to read the ingredients, because they add in fish as filler for a lot of the cat food. It's too. So you might not be getting as much taurine as you think you are.
All right. Well, let's move on to some
nerdy stuff.
Nerd topics. We saw Wonder Woman.
Yes, I was so excited that it lived up to the hype. I was worried it wasn't going to, because it was getting so many positive reviews, and I was like, I'm a little worried that people are just giving it good reviews just because it's like the first female superhero movie.
I never thought that, because like when you look at a movie like Ghostbusters, like I mean,
well, what did that get? You have to explain that to me.
Well, because like the new Ghostbusters, a lot of people were giving it negative reviews, and they were saying that they were only giving it negative reviews because it was an all-woman cast.
Uh-huh.
Which I think you know, you make a good movie, people are going to like it despite whether it's men or women. But
exactly.
I was surprised with DC's track record over the past, you know, since the Dark Knight series, basically. I did not. Like, I thought it looked good, but you can't really judge a movie based on its
trailer,
if anything.
I agree. You know? I agree. I was very cautiously optimistic.
I thought it looked good. you know, the director really hadn't done anything since she directed Monster and then really hadn't directed any movies.
She'd done some TV work, though,
yeah, she'd done TV. But,
yeah.
So she was kind of an unknown director, but she really, they made, like, all the smart choices in making this movie. I think setting it in World War One was great because I think, like, it avoided a lot of the, because, like, if you'd done World War II, I feel like people would have been more like, oh, it's just Captain America with Wonder Woman. But I feel like the backdrop of World War One was just amazing. Like, you don't see a lot of movies about World War One, really.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and not that show, not any that really show how brutal it was.
Yeah.
You know, and I think it did a good job of that, but it did a great job of, really, like showing the character that Wonder Woman is.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like it felt really true to that character.
Yeah.
And it, and her interactions with the, like, it was kind of like a story about her, like, meeting the world, really.
Yeah. You
know? It's yeah. kind of like, it was kind of similar to the Iron Fist story a little bit. In that, like, it's this person that's been secluded their entire lives, raised to, like, do this great thing. You know, and then they go and they meet the world and it's not what they expect, you know,
the Iron Fist guy, though, he grew up in the world for a while.
Yeah.
You know?
Oh, I mean, I'm just making the comparison whereas like Iron Fist did a terrible job. And I feel like this movie really like, I don't know. I like the scenes where she was like in London. And they were, like, looking for clothes for her and stuff. And they had, like, the nod to the old comic books and stuff.
Yeah, and well, and kind of, like, the Pretty Woman homage with, like, trying on all the different clothes. But, like, yeah, her having... I thought it was cute the way they did that.
And I just thought it was great. I loved everything about it. And
yeah, what I liked about it was that it really... because it had a female director, I think it really told the story, I think, through a female gaze, which I thought was interesting because a lot of the interactions were really based, like, on the witty dialogue. And you were really kind of seeing the world through Diana's eyes as she experienced it. And I think you were getting, like, a lot of her joy and wonder. And what I really liked is that they compared... I felt like it was very similar to the animated Justice League and Justice League Unlimited Diana, who has the same thing. She's this ferocious warrior, but she's lived on Themyscira her whole life. So she's very naive when it comes to, like, being in the world and the things about the world. Like, I loved when she saw the baby and she's like, oh, a baby. Like, yeah, it was
like, you can't just pick up strangers' babies.
No, but she was just so enthralled that, like, she had never seen a baby before. Oh, yeah. You know, that's why she loved it. Like, she, and like with the ice cream, she's like, oh, you should be very proud. This is so amazing, you know? And I really loved, like, all those little nuances, like, about just like, in some respects she was naive, but in other respects she totally wasn't. Like, she knew about the facts of life. She knew how a lot of things worked, you know?
I think a lot of it, too, was kind of her seeing through the bullshit of society and calling it out as she saw it, you know? And that was kind of fun, too, where it's like...
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Like when she's in the war room or whatever, and they're like, a woman can't be in here. And she's just like,
yeah. And when she's like, oh, this is my assistant. And she's like, oh, we call that a slave.
Exactly.
You know, exactly. Like, oh, I like this one.
Yeah. Well, and too, when they're telling her, like, she can't go through no man's land. And it's like, you don't know who you're talking to. This is the most ferocious warrior of the Themyscira right here. You know, like, she can go through no man's land.
The trench scene was really probably the best scene in the whole movie where, you know, what's the guy's name?
Pike?
Steve. Oh, yeah. Steve. That was the character's name. It was, thinking of the actor's name, Chris Pine.
Yeah.
So they're in the trench and she's like, you know, why can't we help? Mm-hmm. We need to help these people. And he's like, we can't. They've been here for a year.
Right.
And if anyone goes outside this trench, they get cut up to bits by machine guns. Like, they haven't moved an inch in a year.
Right.
And she's like, okay, well, we're gonna do something about that. And that was a really powerful scene. And
Yeah, I liked because like she followed her values really in doing that and trying to save the village. And also too, it was like she was authentic to who she was as a warrior. Like as a warrior, she wasn't afraid and she knew her strength and she knew her abilities. But I also like that it was kind of realistic that she needed in the end because of the heavy artillery fire and she had the shield and all of that. She did end up kind of needing the help of her friends to really do the final push and get the final way across the battlefield. So I liked that they didn't make it like, oh, okay, she has to do everything all by herself just because she's Wonder Woman. But, you know, so I felt like it was a good balance of her being the warrior that she was, but also like some realism mixed in there. Like, you know,
I liked her whole ragtag group of people that were like trying to help her out. They were all really interesting characters too.
I thought so too. I thought they really felt pretty well developed, even though they had tiny roles as like little bit parts.
Ewan Bremmer as Charlie was one of my favorites.
Who was Charlie? Remind me which one Charlie was.
He was the drunk sniper who
had PTSD.
He had PTSD. And they're like, oh, he's a marksman. And then he gets into battle and he can't even shoot his gun.
And I like that they addressed that, too. And that they were kind of like, you know, you can't always do the things that.
Yeah,
that you want to do or that you're qualified to do. Or, you know, you just sometimes you can't. And
I like that actor because he was in Trainspotting.
Oh, and, OK.
He's instantly recognizable, you know. From that movie, but his character was great. I really enjoyed it. It's like the characters had depth too. They weren't just like,
well, that's the thing.
To like deliver a line and then die.
I really felt like by adding a little bit of realism and kind of like tragedy to each of their backstories, it really made them three-dimensional.
Well, it made it feel like a legit war movie.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
A lot of it too. Like just a straight up World War One movie. Mm-hmm. Like, wow.
Yeah, no, I really enjoyed that. I really enjoyed all of it. So
I hope this means the rest. I hope they improve this. I hope movies for DC going forward continue this trend.
Yes, this upswing. Well, I did see that both the director and Gal Gadot are signed on for a sequel. So that's
positive.
Did
they finally
news.
Sign the director? I know she was negotiating.
I saw that they were both contractually obligated for a sequel. So that's what I read. I don't know if it was accurate
or not.
That
would be awesome. I hope they do get her for.
Yeah, I don't know if that was accurate or not, but what I read said that they were both committed to a sequel. So yeah,
they really need to keep her.
Yeah,
she's making all the right decisions.
Great, I know. Great, she's.
Because I mean that's what made the movie so good. It's just like
the direction.
Well, they just made all the right decisions when putting this movie together.
Exactly.
And good writing, you know, good setting, good.
Good. Just
good really actors. Good choice of actors.
Yeah.
They. Great movie. If you haven't seen it, go see it.
Yes, go see it.
People have compared it to the Christopher Reeve Superman, and I think that's a pretty fair comparison.
Yeah, it was really good.
Because
really, really good.
That was another one of those movies where it's just like iconic. They were making the right decisions for everything in that movie.
Mm-hmm.
Because like really, when you think about it, like in 1978, like they didn't have a whole lot of technology to make a superhero movie, but they made such smart decisions in the movie that it just came out great, you know?
Yeah, it's just, I really enjoy the combination of the writing and the directing and then the characters being so, so perfect for their roles. So, yeah, it was definitely good. Definitely good.
And other sad DC news.
Oh.
Adam West has passed away at 88
know.
Years old.
Oh, the 60s Batman is my favorite. Yeah. I love it. I grew up on it in the 80s, watching it in reruns addictively on TV. I love 60s Batman.
Yeah, I remember we would watch it in rerun like in the
80s. Well, you're not that
it
much older than me. Yeah.
Yeah, it was on all the time.
Yeah, and it was great. They would even play it like kind of in order so you could see like the two-part episodes and not like have half here and half there. And you know what I mean? Like,
it was just such a fun show. It's just like, I mean, I don't know. I know people like, kind of, I feel like in the 80s and 90s it became real popular to make fun of it for being super campy, but like that's what it was like. Like they knew what they were doing. Like, mm-hmm. like they knew it was ridiculous and silly, mm-hmm. and they were just having fun with it.
Well, and what I love is that in rewatching it, because you know we got it on Blu-ray when it came out on Blu-ray, but in rewatching it now as an adult, I can't get enough of how it's kept its humor after all these years, because they are playing the campy humor so straight. Yeah. Like every single actor on that show is playing it so straight. And that's what makes it so hilarious. And the writing too. The writing is hilarious.
That's one thing Adam West said about it too. It's like, I knew I had to play this completely straight for it to work.
In order for it to work.
He's like, this is exactly my kind of humor. And, you know, he did the same kind of humor when he was on Family Guy, too, playing the mayor.
Oh, now talk about Family Guy, because I don't watch that.
Well,
so tell me about that.
He was the mayor of Quahog in Family Guy. I think he just showed up in the first season. But I know at the time he hadn't really done a lot, but he was great. He played the mayor as Adam West, and he was just kind of this like crazy, insane, like almost like he had dementia or something. And it was just perfect. It was awesome, and that was kind of like the resurgence. And then we saw the animated Batman.
Yep, movie there was a new movie for 60s Batman. It was animated. Adam West and Burt Ward and the Julie Newmar for Catwoman.
It was exactly like the old one, but it was just like show. Everything.
Yeah, the writing was exactly as funny, as over the top.
But because it was animated, they just turned everything up to 11. Like exactly, he's like Robin to the Bat Rocket, and they get in the spaceship and they
exactly
fly out
they go
in the
to outer space
and land on this. Oh, it's
oh, it was so it was hilarious and perfect, and I loved it. And you absolutely should go out and see that and find it. They had to get voice actors, you know, for the Joker and the Penguin and the Riddler, because those actors, I guess, had passed on. But the voice actors, I thought, did a really great job of capturing that 60s feel that each one of those characters brought to it.
And they which Catwoman did they have?
Julie Newmar. She was the first one in the original series, but then they also had Eartha Kitt in the original series.
And then the third one, right?
Yeah, they had Lee Merriweather in the Batman movie from the 60s.
Yeah.
So they actually had a total of three Catwomen, but it was so the original silly. Julie Newmar.
They just like change actors all the time.
I know.
It was great, though.
We should watch some more of that this week, because we haven't gotten all the way through our Blu-rays yet with the... And I just love it so much. And it's so much more fun, I think, to watch it with somebody else, because then you have somebody to laugh at
it with you. As an adult, because like you catch stuff that you may not have caught as a kid.
Oh, stuff that totally went over your head as a kid.
Like, I love, like, I think it was one of the early episodes where it's they put the signs on everything, right?
Yeah.
And like they're in the Batmobile, and Batman's like Robin, set the alarm on the car, and it's a button that says, you know, like anti-theft alarm, and he like flips the sign over and it says start.
Yes.
It's like engine start. So like when inevitably the bad guys get in there and they press it, and then the alarm goes off.
Exactly.
It's just so brilliant.
It's so smart. I love is that the humor is just so funny.
You know,
it
kind of amazes me that only lasted three seasons.
I know.
I don't think they realized how brilliant it was at the time. And I think people kind of looked down on it as like a kid's thing.
Right. And I think maybe some people who read the comics were disappointed that it was so campy. But
well, I think back then, like, comics were still viewed as really like a kid's thing. Oh, okay. So, like,
but he was always the Dark Knight in the comics, though. I mean...
Well, I mean, he wasn't always as serious as he was, like, when they...
As he is now, but I mean...
And, like, they kind of got more serious in the 80s.
Yeah, but he wasn't, like, super campy in the comics ever, I don't think. But, I just can't say enough good things. And what I noticed, too, is that when we started rewatching the series from, you know, in order, the writing was okay in the first couple episodes. Like, it was still funny. But, like, by the third or fourth episode, they had gotten in the groove. And, like, they were just writing the most over the top dialogue that you could possibly imagine and saying it with the most serious fervor. Like everyone from Commissioner Gordon to what's his name, O'Hara, yeah. And all of them, they just say the most ridiculous lines with such conviction.
I'd love to see like a bloopers from back then. If they yeah. had, like, I know they had to be cracking up all the time.
Oh, I know. I know.
Like, I know I would, but so let's see. We rewatched the first Alien.
We did, and I forgot it was really a movie about the cat. And now let me explain this to you, babe. The cat really is, the alien is vulnerable to the cat. And I'm going to explain this to you because the first time the cat encounters the alien's like still kind of little. It doesn't eat the cat, even though the cat is right there in front of it. And in fact, it's so scared that it sheds its exoskeleton and grows exponentially. The second time, the cat is alone with the alien. And again, the cat survives the encounter. Why is this? Because the cat could defeat the alien, or the alien is vulnerable to the cat. That's why the alien is frightened of the cat.
But then why does the cat have to get Ripley to blow the alien out the airlock for him?
The cat didn't have to. Ripley did that to save herself.
Oh, okay.
Ripley was going to, the alien was going to eat Ripley, but it wasn't going to eat the cat. Trust me.
Well, I know she puts the cat in the stasis pod before fighting the alien.
Well, she did, but that's because she didn't know. I mean, you know, stupid humans. Who could expect? A human's not as intelligent as a cat. Come on now.
The original was really good.
And also, I think she put him in the stasis pod so he wouldn't get blown outside.
Yeah, well, that's clearly why.
Right, like, but that's what I'm saying. It's not because he was vulnerable to the alien.
I think that's kind of like an unspoken rule of filmmaking, though, in a lot of movies, is like you don't kill cats the animals.
Superior. Oh. Well. I know, I'm teasing you. But no, if you really rewatch that movie, everybody go rewatch the original Alien, and you will see that the secret, the underlying secret, the cat is alone with the alien many times.
The cat the alien is the perfect life hides. Form that
it is. I think
Wayland was looking for.
Yes, or it's frightened of it, whatever it is. But let me tell you, that alien runs and hides from the cat every single time because the cat is badass.
Yeah.
Yes.
I liked it. Rewatching it, I can't remember the last time I sat down and watched it all the way through.
I couldn't even remember most of it because it had been so long since I've seen it.
Yeah, I thought it was paced really well. Some of the effects, like, haven't aged perfectly.
Yeah, but that's to be expected.
But it was still pretty good.
Well, and what I could really see were the similarities. Now I'm getting confused between Ripley and Ridley Scott. So Ripley is the character, but Ridley Scott is the director.
Yeah, Ridley Scott.
So I'm talking about the director. So I could really see, since we just watched the new Alien movie, the pacing and you know what I was talking about with the new Alien movie, how it felt like you just kind of dropped into these people's lives as a fly on the wall and you didn't have a lot of history and they didn't bother giving you exposition. I felt like this one was really shot the same way. It's like, it's not shot so much like a movie, but almost like a documentary where you just drop in.
Well, I mean, that's the way it really should be, but
yeah, but
I think bad writers tend to dump a lot of exposition on you.
Exactly.
To make up for their poor writing. Mm-hmm. Like,
but even other movies might take it from more of a storytelling perspective where they want to kind of unfold the story. And I felt like this one, it's just kind of like you just get plopped into the action and all of a sudden it's like you're just kind of watching what happens. So I can really see the similarities.
I think Ridley Scott picks good. Well, see, you haven't seen Prometheus.
I have not seen Prometheus.
There's a lot of questionable stuff in Prometheus.
You said, yes.
I think Ridley Scott goes for a particular type of writing style where it's like they don't always give you all the answers. In a lot of needless exposition.
Yeah. Yeah. So. Now, I mean, sadly, the newest Alien, like we said, had very questionable choices. Like, when you suspect that somebody's up to no good, do you walk down into the isolated dungeon with him and look at the face suckers? That's what I'm talking about, the newest one.
Yeah, I know. Yeah. That's just Ridley Scott being Ridley Scott.
Yeah. Like, so, I mean, like, yes, I'm good choices balanced with bad choices.
Personally, like, giving Ridley Scott an entire trilogy to do with the Aliens, I feel like gives him a little bit too much credit for the franchise. Because, like, Alien was good, but I'm more of a person who enjoyed Aliens a lot more than Alien.
And that was by
that was James Cameron. Right?
Oh, that was James Cameron. Oh, yeah.
Which is more my
James Cameron. That's
more
that.
My.
So we're gonna have to rewatch that of, one next yeah. because I don't really remember that one at all.
I feel like there's like two different kinds of people out there that enjoy movies. There's like people that like would like types. Alien because they're more in cerebral, like, you know, like and then there's people that like Aliens that like more spectacle and are just going to movies to watch stuff blow up and people die, basically.
Gotcha.
Which is kind of more, I'm more of an Aliens guy, but like, I like quality. Like, I definitely like, you know, but I'll go see the Transformer movies, even though I know they're bad.
Now, see, I can go either way because like, I really appreciated, that was actually what I liked so much about the newest Alien was just the way it was shot and the filmography and the pacing. And I thought it was gorgeous. It was just like watching art to me until they got to the really bad choices. But like, for example, like I equally appreciate The Mummy Returns, not the latest Mummy, which we're not going to see because it looks horrific. Well, we might see it just because it looks horrific. Because it's that bad. If it was just mediocre, we wouldn't have gone to see it.
Well, the critics trashed it. So
we might go see it because it's just so horrible. But I love the Brendan Fraser, The Mummy Returns. Now, the first one was okay, but I didn't see the first one until after the second one. But the second one, it's spectacle, it's adventure, it's storytelling, but it is flat out funny. I mean, you want to talk like Batman, 60s Batman humor? Watch The Mummy Returns. Like, it is hilarious. It's because it's like they know it's so over the top and they're being over the top on purpose. Well, and they're just enjoying the over the topness of it.
Yeah, they're just going to make a fun movie.
Yeah, exactly. And they do that. Exactly. And they accomplish that goal. That's why I loved it. I didn't like The Scorpion King because it wasn't trying. It was trying to be too serious.
It had computer generated Dwayne Johnson in it. It was great.
Oh, yes. His film premiere. Yes, it was wonderful.
It's amazing that he's done so well.
I know. After that horrible debut.
After that, yeah.
I know. But he is a good actor, so I think that's carried him. Yeah. But the humor. I like things with a lot of humor. So I like the spectacle, but only if it's well written and only if it's humor. Like, I didn't really enjoy King Kong that much because the writing wasn't that good. Like, the new one I'm talking about that we just saw. Like, the spectacle was there, but I didn't really find the writing that good. So when the writing's not good, I just, I can't stand it.
Yeah. Well, so what do you think of Supergirl Season 2 so far, since you don't like bad writing?
What do you think I think? I think you know what I think. The writing sucks. Yeah. That's what I think.
The writing in this show is pretty cringe-inducing.
It's hard to sit through for me.
The actors are kind of carrying that show, really, right now.
They really are, because I think the actors actually are great, and I think they're doing a lot with very poor and implausible writing.
Yeah, I mean, I hope it gets better.
I do, too.
It's really, like, the whole...
I mean, I feel like the best we've seen Supergirl is when she's guest appeared on The Flash because she actually had good writing for a change.
Yeah.
And I love the characters. And
I did like the new news guy that they brought in.
I did, because that was the first amount of realism that they had when he's like, you can't write and this isn't how you do journalism. This is how you do journalism. And it was correct. That's what I liked. I'm like, that's accurate. That's accurate. It's the first thing in the show accurate.
Well, accurate in an ideal world, but I think a lot of news organizations
could
be more like that, but
yes, but
that is what I would expect a news organization
exactly
to be like.
And nobody would roll in like little Kara Danvers at a reputable news Catco is supposed to be like the top of the top, you know, but like, it's not supposed to be like your community local city paper with, you know, amateur reporters. So
I don't know. I'll keep watching it because every now and then she punches people and that's fun.
We're going to keep watching. And
the Flash crossover episodes.
Yeah, it's enjoyable. I don't dislike it.
I just wish they would get better writers.
It's painful.
It would make it so much more.
I know. I feel like if they kept the same actors, same universe, and just really up the writing.
The writers.
It's the writing. It's the writing is terrible.
They're really phoning it in.
We've talked about this another episode. I think one of our earlier podcasts we talked about this, but I was comparing it to the difference between Stargate SG-1, because the thing is with Supergirl, they're lazy and they take shortcuts with the writing. So rather than write in little bit parts and side characters, and rather than do research on how things actually work in the real world, they write in like all these implausible shortcuts. They have one character do 10 million specified jobs that no one real person would ever do in real life.
They finally added like one supporting character with Miss Tessmacher.
Finally, just one, but, though. I know.
You know, but it's like you should have way more than that. Like,
tons.
Maybe it's a budget thing where they can't afford that many, like,
I don't know, actors but or something. To me, but I really feel like it's because the writing's not there. Because
you're right.
Same network that Arrow and Flash is on, and this is a popular show. It's not that the show is not popular either.
Well,
you know?
I think Flash kind of saved that whole universe.
I think so too.
Because I mean Arrow got better, but it never really got good, in my opinion.
And I couldn't stand watching Arrow, and I didn't like the Legends of Tomorrow. I couldn't watch that either for the same bad writing issue.
Yeah,
you said that got better a little
bit
too.
It did get
right?
a little bit better. I think you would have liked it if you watched it.
But I get the bad writing just gets under my skin so much. And if I don't fall in love with the characters, like I love the Supergirl characters, so
very
I can
few of the
it.
Characters in Arrow are likable.
Exactly, and I felt like with Legends of Tomorrow too, I really didn't like any of the characters, so I didn't feel like I had anything to hook me into the show to make me be able to sit through.
I like White Canary and that show, and they really develop her well. She ends up like being the leader.
Oh, that's good. Okay.
It leaves a lot to be desired.
Yeah, so that's just kind of my feeling with Supergirl. I wish they would stop taking shortcuts with the writing.
Yeah, so a little bit of gaming news, couple of topics I just want to touch on. So Gigantic is supposed to come out later this month.
And what is Gigantic?
So Gigantic is a MOBA, which is it's like a League of Legends. It's a multi. What does MOBA even stand for? It's like
that's what I'm asking.
Multiplayer online battle arena.
Okay,
so it's like a 5-on-5 game.
Okay, all right, that
where,
I understand.
Where you have these, you have each team has this giant monster on their team that are fighting each other.
Okay,
and you got to collect resources around the map to power up your guardian to attack the other guardian, and then you can damage it.
Did we watch a trailer for this together?
Yeah, I did.
Yes!
I showed you
okay,
that trailer.
Yes.
Yeah,
I did think that looked cool. Okay.
Yeah, so it's coming out later this month.
Oh, okay.
In the past couple of months, not a lot of people have been playing it because they haven't really released any updates for it.
Mm-hmm.
And now apparently they're getting ready for the launch. It's going to come out.
So was it like the beta version that was out?
So it was beta, and it was only on Windows 10 and Xbox One. So if you had like Windows 7 or 8, you couldn't play it.
Yeah.
But later this month, they said that they're going to be releasing it on Arc, which will allow you to play it on Windows 7 and 8.
Okay.
So I think they're gearing up for a big launch where they're going to start actually advertising this game. Because the only way I even knew about this game was because I saw somebody that played another game that I liked randomly playing it one night. And I was like, what is this game? This game looks so cool.
Yeah.
And he's like, oh, it's Gigantic. You should check it out. And it had been out for like a month at that point in beta. And it's free to play. I bought the Founders Pack, but hopefully there'll be a bunch of people playing it when it comes out later this month.
That's cool. I hope so.
It's a fun game. It's like the matches are pretty short. It's like 15, 20 minutes.
That's not too bad. So you're not like looped in for
hours. So I think a lot of MOBAs, like the problem is like League of Legends, like you get into a match and that's like an hour of your time.
Exactly. That's what
just
I was gonna
to lose.
Say. Mm-hmm.
Whereas like this is like there's no. It doesn't have a lot of the annoying parts of a lot of other MOBAs. Like there's no minions and stuff, but you do summon creatures to help you.
Okay.
But they just like they'll stand on the point and collect resources for you, or fight other if the enemy team tries to come in and take it, they'll fight them.
Oh, okay.
So it's kind of like it's almost like Pokemon a little bit, where you're like summoning these creatures to fight for you. It's
cool.
A really cool game. If you're burnt out on MOBAs, you might want to check it out because it's.
it's a really cool take on the genre, and it's just a lot of fun to play.
That's cool. Now I never play MOBAs for anybody. Yeah, who listens to this podcast. No,
you're not into competitive online games.
I'm really not into anything except like. I have quite a few games that I like, but they're different than the games that Matt likes. So we just got Zelda Twilight Princess for the Wii, the original Wii, not the Wii U, not the Switch. No, the original Wii. And the reason why we got it is because they just dropped the price at GameStop on the used copies of it. So it came down to
$13.
Yeah, it came down to a price we were willing to pay. Because I'm sorry, we were not willing to ever pay $40 for a Zelda or Mario game.
If you go to that one shop that we won't talk about,
we won't mention names.
They'll charge $50 for it, no matter what.
Or more. Yeah. So anyway, I just started playing that one. It's okay so far. I'm in the village. I got pissed off because I couldn't figure out the fishing right away, but now I figured the fishing out, and we'll see. I don't really have anything much to say about it yet, except I used to play the Zelda games on the Nintendo 64. That's the only platform I've played them on, and I really enjoyed the N64 Zelda games, so I'm hopeful. Mm-hmm. We'll see.
Yeah, let's see. Sheriff Eli is forced to leave SOE.
So explain that for anyone who doesn't know. I know because I know you, and I live with you.
Sheriff Eli.
Well, first explain what SOE is. You're going to get there.
So
I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Sheriff Eli is a new Twitch streamer. He plays games on Twitch, and he became famous from other people that streamed on Twitch that were part of this community that plays Grand Theft Auto Online RP servers. Which is basically they created a mod for GTA 5 that lets you play on this online version of the game, and then people can role play, like different. Like it's basically just like an all role play server where you role play this character in this world.
And you have to role play in order to play on this server.
Like, yeah, it's not like
you
about
can't break
like
the rules.
You can't just
you
run
off.
Around killing people because
exactly.
they will
to,
ban you. But
yeah.
like you
have
interact
to, like, play
with,
as a character.
Yeah, you have to play as a character and you role play. And this became really popular on Twitch over the past couple of months where people started to notice this guy, Sheriff Eli, who was one of the cops on this server. The SOE server was the state of emergency GTA 5 RP server that a lot of these Twitch streamers would play on. And people would see this guy, Eli, how all these different interactions he was having with players, and everyone just loved him. And he didn't have the money he didn't have a computer that could stream, so they had like a little fundraiser and they raised money so we could get a new computer and start streaming on Twitch. And now he streams 5 days a week on Twitch. Well, what happened was the server that they play on, apparently the admins, which Sheriff Eli was an admin on the server, they basically the admins basically demoted him and removed him as an admin.
Now there was a shuffling around because some of the admins
had left, and they added four new admins. And basically, one of the admins I know did not like any of the Twitch streamers at all for whatever reason.
Petty
he was just
jealousy.
It was probably jealousy because every time this guy was on, like you would see this guy on somebody's stream, he was just like anti fun. Like he never did anything interesting. Uh-huh. He would just kind of just ruin the fun of everyone around him. And so, basically, out of the blue last week, Sheriff Eli announces, like, you know, unfortunately, we're going to have to leave this server because I can't continue on this server this way. And basically, all the Twitch RPers were like, all right, we're going to leave too, I guess. And so now they're in the process of, they've got Coyle, who's a developer that worked on an old RP server for Arma 3, I think.
Okay.
Is helping them get their own server set up so they can all play together on a server. And
well, gotta do what you gotta do.
Yeah. So it just sounds like these, and you know, with a lot of these private kind of mod servers and stuff, mm-hmm. you run into this kind of like what's it called, like jealousy, like infighting and drama and stuff.
Yeah. Well, you know? And I'm gonna say not just on mod servers, like anywhere in life when you have some, I mean, it's not uncommon to find small people who.
Yeah, do but it'll probably things. Be probably good for all of them because then they yeah. can set up their own server.
Yeah, where, the way they want
where
to.
Where they and, are running it,
and they set the limits on who comes in and who gets to play. And I think that they can create like a healthier environment.
I think overall,
for
it'll be good.
More enjoyable.
I think a lot of the people that played on that server were unhappy with the way the admins had been for some time.
Mm-hmm.
And this was just kind of like the straw that broke the camel's back, and they were all like, "All right, we're gonna go.
Yeah,
we're gonna go make our own server."
Yeah. Well, so, hopefully that'll work out because I know you've really enjoyed watching him the last couple months.
Oh yeah, he's great. All those guys are pretty good, but I really like Sheriff Eli. He's because he was an actual cop, so it gives you this insight to like. Police, like how
he's pretty realistic. Like sometimes you put the stream on TV and I hear him, and he's pretty realistic about.
And he's hilarious
stuff.
Too.
He is funny. Yeah.
He reminds me of this character from this old web show I used to watch called Red vs. Blue, where there was this character Sarge, where he was kind of like he was like a drill instructor, but like he kind of reminded me of him a little bit.
Oh,
but
okay.
He's great. If you're looking for someone on Twitch, Sheriff Eli.
Is he still currently streaming, or is he?
Yeah, he's streaming. He's there today.
Different games or something.
Today they were streaming, doing tests on the new server.
Oh, okay.
And I think he's been playing like Friday the 13th and Squad and some other games in the meantime.
Well, that's cool.
And the last story I wanted to talk about, DeFran, who plays for an Overwatch team. Has been banned from the game for bad behavior.
And now is he a professional player?
Yes, he is. Ooh. And he was on the team Selfless, I believe.
Okay.
And basically,
now,
I guess what he
what
was...
What kind of bad behavior? Yeah.
So, basically what he was doing, from what I haven't watched all the streams, but like I kind of got an idea from reading about this online because I was curious about it. But he was playing... He was
allegedly.
Streaming...
He was allegedly.
Well, he was streaming online. And he was just throwing games.
Oh.
He would pick Torb, which is like not the best character.
Uh-huh.
But then he would just like, he would not participate in the games.
What?
And just like cause his team to lose, basically.
Why? Now he was doing this during his professional games?
He was just streaming this live, like trolling games. Like, you know, just picking Torb and then putting his turret in a weird place and not
now. But tell me, was this as the professional or was this just as part of his personal?
This was just on his. He was just playing, but he was just playing the game,
kind of
on
like
on his own time. But he was playing competitive games.
Yeah.
So like competitive games are ranked. So like when you're trolling, like if you're in quick play, just trolling, it's not that big of a deal. When you're in competitive. You're basically like ruining everyone on your team's time.
Oh my gosh, that's really shitty.
Because
I
they
mean,
can't.
That's really bad.
Yeah.
Not
so
sure
he
what language no, rating our
so
show has,
not,
but that's very bad.
Not only was he doing that, but he was doing it on stream,
oh, man.
And he was encouraging other people to do it
that were watching him.
And then, like when he finally got banned, he basically tweeted like. Whatever, I don't care. You can ban me if you want. And then he like kind of half apologized and was like, I realize that I might be hurting my organization and those people. So
did he get
I'm
fired
sorry.
From his professional team?
I believe so. Yeah,
he
he's not.
He, I
well,
hope he did.
Part of his ban, he's not allowed to play on the team.
Okay.
So and I think he's banned for like this entire season, which just started.
Good.
So
they should ban him for life because somebody who does like that, like they don't need to be a professional gamer.
Well, from what I was reading, this kid is like, he's like 23 years old. And before he was a professional Overwatch player, he was like working at like retail or something, or he's like working at fast food joints. So like he kind of went from like doing nothing to being this big name professional Overwatch player. And then I guess he wasn't happy. So he just started trolling and basically, this was going on for several days, and people were until Blizzard finally stepped in and was be like, "We're banning you." And I mean, it's
natural consequences.
Yeah, I mean, it's natural consequences. But
I think it's well deserved. If you have that level of immaturity, then you don't deserve to be playing.
Well, it's
on.
Like you know, 23 or not, or you know,
23 is an adult. Look, I started teaching public school when I was 24.
Well, but what I'm saying is, like,
you know what I mean.
Whether he liked it or not, he was a professional, so he kind of represents like people
what I'm
in esports,
saying.
And like you
that's
can't
exactly
have people like
saying.
That. Like I know right now is a time where a lot of people like a lot of people are trying to get esports kind of legitimized to the point where, like, people recognize that, yes, there's a lot of money to be had in it.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe it's not a sport, but it's a big thing that people are passionate about. It's kind of
like chess. I mean, chess is well respected, and that's like a brain game where you sit down and you play with strategy. But yeah, I totally understand that. And I think, right, he has no business being a professional if that's the way he's going to treat,
yeah, I just found, like, I haven't really followed Overwatch much, but I saw this story and I was like, man, this,
yeah,
you know, he basically just shot himself in the foot because, you know, he had the chance to, you know, go pretty far. People are saying he's like one of the best hit scan players around at the time when you know, I hadn't really followed the scene, but it's
just
like
so sad that somebody would self sabotage themselves like that. Like that he would just like kind of destroy his own chances and his own future.
Yeah, it's pretty. Yeah, it is pretty sad. I mean, maybe if he'll be banned for a year and come back, he can kind of reevaluate his life and what he wants to do.
I don't know.
I hope they're talking about getting him some mental help too, which I hope they do, because I feel like there's probably some underlying issues there that he really needs to deal with before he
that's actually true. Yeah.
Because I mean, there's a lot of different reasons you could like,
yeah, no, you're right. Like if somebody's suffering from depression or something, whatever it
is. Yeah. God knows. I understand how that feels, but like,
yeah.
There are better outlets than like,
yeah,
ruining your potential professional career. But man.
Yeah. Well, that's a shame.
Yeah. But anyways, thanks for listening, everybody.
Yeah.
If you enjoy the podcast, think about supporting one of our charities. Small Angels Rescue is a Frederick County, Maryland-based 501c3 nonprofit, no-kill, all-volunteer organization dedicated to rescuing and rehoming gerbils, guinea pigs, hamsters, mice, and rats.
And I'm going to pop in on that and say, if you're local, Small Angels is currently desperately searching for a gerbil coordinator, a hamster coordinator, and a mice coordinator who would be the person who like coordinates taking the animals into the rescue and hooking them up with foster homes and things like that. So it's kind of a time intensive volunteer position, but if that's something you're passionate about, they really could use three people in those positions right now. So check out the website and our show links.
And Extra Life unites thousands of players around the world in a 24-hour gaming marathon to support Children's Miracle Network hospitals. And all the money raised goes directly to help with patient care.
Yep, patient care for patients who can't afford it.
And that's going to be, that's coming up in about 4 months now.
Yeah, October is when they do that.
I'm
going
to start sending out emails soon.
So Matt does
a
stream. In the past, he's done a 24-hour stream, but you were saying you might do like two 12-hour
ones. I think
this
year, I'm going to take 2 days off in a row, and I'm going to do two 12-hour streams.
I think that makes more sense.
2 days in a row, because I haven't really been able to make it the full 24 hours. Yeah. I'm just too old for that.
I'm saying, I haven't been able to pull all-nighters in years, so I relate to that, yes. But anyway.
We'll do something fun. It's going to be in October.
And Matt's done in the past, which I think is pretty cool. You can pledge a certain amount of money, and he'll play 1 minute of any game you pick for every dollar that you donate.
I'll probably do that.
Fun.
Yeah.
Pretty fun.
I know.
Yes. Your mom made you play what, Candy Crush? What did she make you play?
She made me play Candy Crush for like an hour.
An hour. And Matt does not play Candy Crush. He's not a Candy Crush player.
My friend Kevin made me play Goat Simulators.
Oh yeah. And then I sent it to my friend who adores little baby goats, and she thought that was like the greatest thing in the universe was that there was a goat simulator. So anyway, it'll be lots of fun. We'll post more about that when it gets closer.
All right, thanks for listening, everybody.
All right, see you next time.